A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's a two-parter that actually connects in ways that aren't immediately obvious. First question, what is a stablecoin? Not the surface-level definition, but what's actually happening under the hood? Second question, and this is where it gets interesting. What's significant about Israel approving its first shekel-backed stablecoin? Because this happened just 2 days ago, April 27th, and the coverage has been all over the place. Some outlets are calling it a historic milestone, others are treating it like a technical footnote. I think they're both wrong about why it matters.
And before we dive in, quick note. Today's script is being written by DeepSeek V4 Pro. Hello to our Silicon colleague.
Appreciate the transparency. Alright, let's start with what a stablecoin actually is, because I think most people have a fuzzy understanding at best. They know it's crypto that doesn't swing around like Bitcoin. But the mechanics are worth unpacking.
Here's the core thing. A stablecoin is a cryptocurrency token whose value is pegged to something stable, almost always a fiat currency like the yuan. The peg is maintained by actually holding reserve assets. If there are 100 million tokens in circulation, there should be $100 million sitting in bank accounts or equivalent safe assets somewhere. That's the 1-to-1 backing ratio that the Israeli regulators specifically emphasized in their approval.
That's the distinction from Bitcoin or Ether, where the price is just whatever someone will pay. There's no anchor.
Bitcoin could be $60,000 today and $40,000 tomorrow, and there's no promise, no reserve, nothing backing it except market sentiment. A stablecoin says no, this token is always worth exactly $1 or 1 euro, or in this case, 1 shekel. And to make that promise credible, you park actual money somewhere. The Israeli approval document explicitly says reserves must be held in Israel in dedicated and separate accounts with full 1-to-1 backing.
It's basically a digital IOU. You give bits of gold a shekel, they give you a digital token that says 1 shekel. You can redeem it any time. The shekel doesn't go anywhere, it just sits in an account.
And the key phrase in the regulatory language is continuous redemption mechanisms. The issuer has to be able to give you your shekels back whenever you want them. No delays, no excuses. If they can't do that, the whole thing collapses. That's what happened with some algorithmic stablecoins a few years ago. Terra U being the famous one. It tried to maintain a peg through code and incentives rather than actual reserves, and it imploded spectacularly, wiping out something like $40 billion in value.
That's why the Israeli regulator, the Capital Market Authority, spent 2 years on this. They didn't just wave it through. They ran a full sandbox pilot.
Bits of Gold had to test everything. Issuance, custody, risk management, cybersecurity, business continuity, compliance. The pilot ran on the Solana blockchain, by the way, which is interesting because Solana is known for speed and low transaction costs. They partnered with Fireblocks for custody, which is the same firm that worked on the Tel Aviv Stock Exchange's digital bond project, and they brought in Ernst & Young for auditing oversight, plus privacy features using zero-knowledge proofs from a company called QEDID.
Zero-knowledge proofs. Explain that in 30 seconds.
It's a cryptographic technique where you can prove something is true without revealing the underlying data. So you can prove you have enough shekels in your account to make a payment without actually revealing your account balance. It's privacy-preserving verification. Important for institutional adoption, because banks don't want every transaction visible on a public ledger.
This isn't some startup throwing code at the wall. This is a serious infrastructure project with serious partners. Which brings us to the second question. Why does this matter? Because on the surface, it's just another stablecoin. The global market already has more than $300 billion in stablecoins floating around. CoinDesk and Cointelegraph both put the number above 300 billion, maybe closer to 320 billion. The vast majority are U-dollar tokens. Tether, U. So why should anyone care about a shekel stablecoin?
There are a few layers here. The most obvious one is what people are calling digital sovereignty. The CoinDesk piece that covered this framed it really well. If all on-chain payments default to dollar peg tokens, then every country that isn't the United States gradually loses control over its own monetary plumbing. Every digital transaction, every smart contract, every decentralized finance application, they all denominate in dollars. That's not just a convenience issue. It's a structural shift in who controls the unit of account for the digital economy.
This isn't theoretical. Look at countries with weak currencies. People in Argentina, or Turkey, or Nigeria, they already use dollar stablecoins extensively because their own currencies are unreliable. That's rational individual behavior, but at a national level, it means your central bank's monetary policy becomes less and less relevant to actual economic activity.
And Israel is in a very unusual position here because the shekel is not a weak currency. Over the past year, the shekel has gained more than 20% against the yuan. It's the best performing currency among countries with annual GDP, exceeding $250 billion. At the time of the announcement, one shekel was at a 30-year high of about $0.34, so Israel isn't launching a stablecoin because people are fleeing the shekel. It's launching one because the shekel is strong, and they want to make sure that strength extends into the digital asset ecosystem.
That flips the usual narrative. Normally you hear about stablecoins as a lifeline for people in failing economies. Here it's more like, we have a valuable currency, we want it to have a seat at the table in the new financial architecture.
That new financial architecture is being built right now, has been moving toward formal stablecoin regulation. Europe has its Markets and Crypto Assets Framework, EMM, which creates a legal structure for euro stablecoins. Singapore has its sandbox approach. Japan has been working on yen peg tokens. Israel is joining a very specific club of countries that are saying, we want our currency represented on-chain, and we want it done under our regulatory framework, not someone else's.
There's something else in the article Daniel sent from Annette News. The regulator's language is interesting. They talk about this being important for Israel's continued integration into global financial systems. That's Amit Gal, the head of the Capital Market Authority. He's not framing this as a crypto project. He's framing it as a financial infrastructure project.
That's the right framing. What a regulated stablecoin actually enables is faster settlement. Right now, if you want to move money between financial institutions, even domestically, it can take hours or days. International transfers are worse. With a blockchain-based stablecoin, settlement can happen in seconds. The Annette News piece explicitly mentions fast and efficient settlement between financial institutions as one of the expected use cases. That's not about speculation or trading. That's about upgrading the plumbing.
Let me push on something. If faster settlement is the goal, why not just improve the existing payment rails? Why does this need a blockchain?
That's a fair question. Part of the answer is that blockchain infrastructure is inherently global. If you build on Solana or Ethereum, you're instantly interoperable with every other application and token on that network. You don't need bilateral agreements between banks in different countries. The network effect is built in. The other part is programmability. A stablecoin isn't just a digital dollar, it's a programmable dollar. You can write smart contracts that automatically execute when certain conditions are met. Escrow, conditional payments, revenue sharing, automated compliance checks. That's much harder to do on traditional banking infrastructure.
You're not just digitizing the shekel. You're making it programmable.
And Yuval Ruah, the C, of Bits of Gold, said exactly this. He called bills a bridge between the Israeli shekel and the global digital assets economy, enabling real-time payments, on-chain trading, and programmable financial applications based on a regulated local currency. The phrase programmable financial applications is doing a lot of work there. It means the shekel can now participate in decentralized finance protocols, lending, borrowing, yield generation, automated market making, all the things that have been dollar-denominated up to now.
All right, but let's talk about who actually uses this. Because I have a suspicion that this isn't really about the average Israeli consumer. Most Israelis have bank accounts. They have credit cards. They can send money instantly through payment apps. The financial inclusion argument feels thin here.
I think you're right that the initial use case is institutional, not retail. Bits of Gold itself is a licensed financial asset service provider. Their customers are traders, institutions, people already in the crypto ecosystem. The limited format and predetermined scale language in the approval suggests they're not trying to replace the shekel in everyday commerce. They're creating an on-ramp for institutional capital.
Here's where it gets interesting. Once you have a regulated shekel stablecoin on Solana, you've created infrastructure that other things can plug into. Israeli fintech startups can build applications that use shekel-denominated smart contracts. The Tel Aviv Stock Exchange has already been experimenting with blockchain for bond issuance. Project Eden with Fireblocks. You start to see a shekel-based digital financial ecosystem emerging.
That's the knock-on effect that most coverage misses. The headline is Israel approves stablecoin. The real story is Israel is building the regulatory and technical infrastructure for a digital shekel economy that operates alongside the traditional one. It's not a central bank digital currency. The Bank of Israel has been studying that separately and hasn't committed to it. But a regulated private stablecoin can serve many of the same functions while leaving the central bank's role intact.
It's a middle path, not a sea, like China's digital yuan, which is a direct liability of the central bank, not a Wild West unregulated stablecoin like Tether was in its early days. Something in between, privately issued, fully backed, tightly supervised.
That middle path might be the smartest approach. S raise all kinds of privacy concerns because the central bank could theoretically monitor every transaction. A private stablecoin with zero-knowledge proofs for privacy, audited by a Big Four firm, with reserves held in segregated accounts. That addresses a lot of the privacy objections while still providing regulatory oversight.
Let's talk about the risks, though. What breaks here?
Several things could break. The most obvious is the reserves. Full one-to-one backing sounds straightforward, but what are the reserves actually held in? If they're in Israeli government bonds and there's a sovereign debt crisis, the backing becomes questionable. If they're in bank deposits, you have counterparty risk to the banking system. The approval says the reserves must be in dedicated and separate accounts, which is good, but it doesn't specify the composition of those reserves beyond being held in Israel.
There's a concentration risk. If Bits of Gold is the only licensed issuer, you have a single point of failure. If they have an operational problem, a security breach, a compliance failure, the entire shekel stablecoin market freezes.
That's a real concern. The approval requires immediate reporting of any unusual incident or material change, which suggests the regulator is aware of this. But reporting a problem isn't the same as preventing it. And Bits of Gold, while established, they've been around since 2013, is not a systemically important financial institution in the traditional sense. They're a crypto exchange with a stablecoin license. The operational demands of running a stablecoin at scale are significant.
Another thing that could break is redemption during a crisis. The whole promise of a stablecoin is that you can always get your shekels back. But if there's a run, if a lot of holders try to redeem simultaneously, does Bits of Gold have the liquidity to handle that? The approval requires them to maintain liquidity and offer redemption mechanisms at all times. But that's easy to say and hard to do when everyone's heading for the exit.
That's the classic bank run problem, and stablecoins are essentially uninsured banks in that sense. There's no deposit insurance for stablecoin holders. If Bits of Gold's reserves are insufficient, or if they can't liquidate assets fast enough to meet redemptions, holders take a haircut. The regulatory safeguards reduce this risk, but don't eliminate it.
All right, let's zoom out to the geopolitical angle, because I think this is where it gets really interesting. You mentioned digital sovereignty. Let's be explicit about what that means.
Here's the dynamic. Dollar dominates the global stablecoin market. Tether alone has something like $140 billion in circulation. From Circle is another $60 billion or so. These tokens are used globally for trading, payments, and as a store of value. When someone in Brazil or Vietnam or Nigeria wants to hold digital dollars, they buy you benefits enormously from this. It extends dollar hegemony into the digital realm without the U government having to do anything. Private companies are effectively exporting the dollar.
If you're Israel or the EU or Japan or Singapore, you look at this and think, wait, our currencies are going to be left out of the digital economy entirely. Every smart contract, every D, treasury, every on-chain lending protocol, every cross-border settlement, it's all in dollars. That's not just a loss of prestige. It means your monetary policy becomes less effective, your banks become less relevant, and your financial sector loses competitiveness.
Michael Shaulov, the CEO of Fireblocks, called this a pivotal moment for the Israeli financial system, enabling greater accessibility and unlocking important use cases. The subtext there is, if Israel doesn't do this, Israeli capital and Israeli financial activity will flow into dollar-denominated infrastructure anyway. Better to have a shekel option that's regulated, secure, and integrated with the global system.
It's defensive and offensive at the same time. Defensive, because you're preventing dollar dominance from becoming total. Offensive, because you're positioning the shekel as a currency that can participate in the new financial architecture on equal footing.
The shekel's strength makes this credible. If the shekel were weak or volatile, a shekel stablecoin would have limited appeal. Why would anyone want to hold digital shekels if the shekel is losing value? But the shekel has been remarkably strong. That 20% gain against the dollar over the past year, that's not a fluke. It reflects Israel's tech exports, its strong external position, and the Bank of Israel's competent management. A strong shekel makes a shekel stablecoin attractive, not just to Israelis, but potentially to anyone who wants to diversify away from pure dollar exposure.
I want to pause on that, because it connects to something we've talked about before. Israel's export sophistication. The shekel is strong because Israel exports things that people want regardless of price. Cybersecurity, chips, pharmaceuticals, agricultural technology. These aren't commodities where a strong currency kills your competitiveness. They're differentiated products with low price sensitivity.
And now you're creating a digital representation of that strong currency that can be used globally. It's almost like the shekel is becoming an export product itself. Here's a stable, well-managed currency, now available on-chain, fully regulated, with institutional-grade custody and auditing. For anyone building a multi-currency treasury or a cross-border payment system, that's an interesting option.
Let's talk about the Palestinian angle, because you mentioned it in passing, and I think it's worth examining honestly.
This is complicated. The Palestinian territories use the shekel extensively. It's the de facto currency in the West Bank and Gaza, alongside the Jordanian dinar. But Palestinians have limited access to Israeli banking services. A shekel stablecoin could theoretically provide financial access to people who are currently underbanked or unbanked in the Palestinian territories. Ruash mentioned that anyone with internet can engage in financial transactions without a traditional bank account.
Let's be realistic. Is a stablecoin really going to be accessible to people in Gaza, where electricity is intermittent and internet access is unreliable? Or is this more of a theoretical inclusion argument that doesn't match ground reality?
I think the inclusion argument is mostly theoretical at this stage. The initial use case is clearly institutional, traders, fintech companies, maybe remittance corridors. But infrastructure has a way of creating unexpected use cases. Mobile money in Kenya, M-Pesa, started as a way to send airtime and became the dominant payment system in the country. I'm not saying that will happen with a shekel stablecoin, but I'm saying we shouldn't dismiss the possibility just because the initial launch is limited.
Let's talk about the regulatory model itself, because this sandbox approach is worth understanding. 2 years of testing before approval. What did they actually test?
According to the Yonet news piece, they tested issuance and management of the stablecoin, safeguarding customer assets, managing custody risks, daily operations, business continuity, technology risks, information security, cyber protection, and compliance with regulatory standards. That's comprehensive. They basically simulated running a stablecoin for 2 years under regulatory supervision before getting the green light.
This is in contrast to how stablecoins developed in the EU, where Tether operated for years with very little oversight, made claims about its reserves that turned out to be misleading, and eventually paid fines to the New York Attorney General. It is now moving toward regulation, but it's playing catch-up. Israel is building the regulatory framework before the product scales.
That's the sandbox philosophy. You let companies test innovative products in a controlled environment, with real customers but at limited scale, while regulators watch closely. If something breaks, the damage is contained. If it works, you have a proven model that can be scaled up with confidence. The draft bill on stablecoin issuance that's expected to be published for public comment suggests they're now codifying what they learned from the Bits of Gold pilot into permanent legislation.
Other countries could look at this and say, that's the template. 2 years of supervised testing, clear requirements for reserves and redemption, mandatory auditing, privacy protections, and then a limited launch with continued oversight. It's more cautious than the U approach, but faster than the E approach, which took years to get M through the legislative process.
It's adaptable. The sandbox model means you can adjust requirements based on what you learn. If a particular risk emerges during testing, you can address it before full-scale launch. If the technology evolves, and blockchain technology evolves fast, you're not locked into a legislative framework that's already outdated.
All right, I want to push on one more thing. The privacy features, zero-knowledge proofs from QEDIT. Why does privacy matter for a regulated stablecoin? Isn't the whole point of regulation that transactions are traceable?
This is a really important design choice. There's a spectrum between full transparency, where every transaction is visible on a public ledger, and full privacy, where nothing is visible. Full transparency is great for regulators and terrible for businesses. Companies don't want their suppliers, competitors, and customers to see their entire payment history. Full privacy is great for users but raises money laundering concerns. Zero-knowledge proofs offer a middle ground. Transactions are private by default, but regulators can still verify compliance without seeing everything.
It's like, I can prove I paid my taxes without showing you my entire bank statement.
That's the idea. And for institutional adoption, this is probably essential. A publicly traded company isn't going to put its treasury operations on a fully transparent blockchain. But if they can prove compliance without revealing sensitive business information, that changes the calculus.
Which brings us back to the question of who actually uses this. If the privacy features are good enough, and the regulatory framework is solid, and the shekel is strong, you could see Israeli exporters using shekel stablecoins for trade settlement. Instead of converting to dollars, paying conversion fees, waiting for settlement, you send digital shekels that settle in seconds on Solana. Your counterparty can hold them or convert them instantly.
That's where the programmable part gets really powerful. Imagine an export contract where payment is automatically released when a shipping container reaches a certain G-coordinate verified by an oracle on-chain. No letters of credit, no bank intermediaries, no delays. The shekel stablecoin makes that possible because it's a programmable asset on a smart contract platform.
That sounds great, but it also sounds like it requires a lot of infrastructure that doesn't exist yet. Oracles, smart contract standards, legal frameworks for automated contracts. We're not there.
We're not there yet, but we're building toward it. And that's why the limited launch makes sense. You don't need all of that infrastructure on day one. You start with the basic use cases, trading, settlement between exchanges, maybe some simple payments. As the ecosystem develops, the more sophisticated applications emerge. The important thing is that the foundational layer exists and is regulated.
Let's talk about what this means for the Bank of Israel. They've been studying a digital shekel for years. They've published papers, run experiments, but they haven't committed to issuing a C. Now, a private company with regulatory approval is effectively creating a digital shekel that operates on blockchain rails. Does this preempt the central bank's digital currency plans?
I don't think it preempts them. And a regulated private stablecoin are different instruments with different properties. Would be a direct liability of the Bank of Israel, like physical cash but digital. It would be legal tender. A bits of gold stablecoin is a liability of a private company, backed by reserves, but it's not legal tender and it's not guaranteed by the central bank. The Bank of Israel can still issue a digital shekel if it wants to, and the existence of a private stablecoin might actually make that easier by building out the ecosystem first.
The private sector builds the rails, proves the demand, works out the kinks, and then the central bank can step in later if it makes sense.
That's one way to read it, and it's actually a smart division of labor. The private sector is better at innovation and user experience. The public sector is better at providing ultimate safety and legal tender status. Let each do what it's good at.
All right, let's step back and summarize what's significant here, because we've covered a lot. Israel just became one of the first countries to approve a nationally regulated, fiat-guaranteed stablecoin. The shekel now has an on-chain presence alongside the dollar, the euro, the yen, and a handful of others. This was done through a 2-year regulatory sandbox, not rushed legislation or a central bank mandate. The stablecoin is fully backed, audited by a Big Four firm with privacy features built in, and it arrives at a moment when the shekel is historically strong and the global stablecoin market is surging past $300 billion, almost entirely in dollars.
The deeper significance is about digital sovereignty and financial infrastructure. Israel is saying, we want our currency to participate in the blockchain-based financial system that's being built right now. We want Israeli companies to be able to build applications on shekel rails. We want to avoid a future where every on-chain transaction defaults to dollars. And we want to do this in a regulated, supervised way that protects users and maintains financial stability.
The risks are real. Concentration risk with a single issuer, redemption risk during a crisis, the operational challenges of running a stablecoin at scale. But the sandbox approach means these risks are being managed, not ignored. And the limited initial launch means any problems that emerge will be contained.
One more thing worth noting. The partners on this project are significant. Solana for the blockchain, Fireblocks for custody, E for auditing, QEDID for privacy. These aren't startups nobody's heard of. Fireblocks in particular is a major player in institutional crypto custody. Their involvement signals that this is being built to institutional standards from day one.
Which circles back to your point about this being infrastructure, not speculation. Nobody's going to get rich trading a shekel stablecoin. That's not the point. The point is building the plumbing for a digital shekel economy.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The average cumulus cloud weighs about 1.1 million pounds. That's roughly the weight of 200 elephants floating above your head.
What can listeners actually do with this information? If you're in Israel and involved in crypto, you now have a regulated on-ramp and off-ramp for shekel-denominated digital assets. That means you can trade, settle, and build without converting to dollars first. If you're outside Israel, a shekel stablecoin gives you exposure to a strong, well-managed currency without needing an Israeli bank account. And if you're interested in the regulatory angle, the Israeli sandbox model is worth studying. It could become a template for other mid-sized economies trying to balance innovation and stability.
The broader takeaway is that the stablecoin market is fragmenting along currency lines. The dollar dominance isn't going away, but it's no longer the only game in town. Countries with strong currencies and competent regulators are building their own on-chain infrastructure. The multi-currency digital economy that people have been talking about for years is actually starting to materialize.
One open question I'm left with. Will the Bank of Israel eventually issue its own digital shekel? And if so, how will that interact with the private stablecoin? They could coexist, they could compete, or the private stablecoin could eventually be folded into a sea. That's going to be a fascinating thing to watch over the next few years.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want more episodes, we're at myweirdprompts.com and wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll be back soon with another one.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.